Welcome to As the Dice Rolls podcast, brought to you by Dice and a Pencil. This is your host, Brian, and today I have Bill with me. Bill, how are you doing?
Doing all right, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing fine on this rainy day. So this is our what we call the We Meet in a Tavern session, where we kind of get to know the people behind the mics. Whenever anybody starts in a tavern in D&D or whenever you meet someone who also plays Dungeons & Dragons or any tabletop game, the first question everyone asks is, you know, how did you get into tabletop RPGs?
Yeah, it's a little bit of an interesting story. I mean, I was... My dad was military, and so we moved around a whole bunch. And so my best friend was my brother at the time. And so we were in San Diego, and we had found a card shop right next door to where we were living. And so we went in there, we bought like these magic cards, and we started playing magic. And little by little, the more that we went into that shop and the more we talked to people, we found that they had like second edition D&D stuff inside of there. And so we started, you know, saving up our allowance and buying these books one at a time. And that actually helped us, because the more that we moved around, it was sort of like the two of us were playing D&D. It was, you know, like an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, but at the same time, it was a good way for us to basically pass the time. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how we started. But then he went off to college, and then I didn't have anybody to play with. And so there was a good, you know, 7 or 8 year period where I didn't play D&D at all. And in fact, until I heard your wife at work talk about how her husband was trying to get into D&D, and I sort of forced my way into the conversation, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I'm very glad you did, because that sent me on my path, essentially. So at this point, you know, during our We Meet in the Tavern sessions, we ask our guests to roll up a character. But I'm, of course, going to ask you to multitask. And as you're rolling up your character, and now we'll be rolling up for use with old school essentials. So it's 3d6 down the line. What is your favorite memory you have from playing D&D?
I would say my favorite memory ever is we were playing one of our early campaigns. It was you, me, and a couple of others. And there was one instance where there was a battle right outside of Suzale in the Forgotten Realms. And through some trickery, one of the characters had turned evil and was a necromancer, and decided that they were going to like raise the dead and then fight all of you at the same time. And it was a really, really harrowing battle. But at a certain point, some of the characters took your character and launched them up into the sky. And it was a series of like nat 20s that like launched you up in. And you basically did the killing blow on the big bad at the time you were in the midair. And then when you landed and everything kind of calmed down, the battle was over, you know, towards the end of the session, you had taken that big bad's hat and then put it on top of the grave that you dug for them. And it was a really, really sweet moment. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah, man, that was through very good storytelling of yours to lead us to that moment. But, you know, that's when you put in those hard hours playing Dungeons and Dragons to get to that final moment where it's that big bad. And, you know, of course, it's all up to the dice sometimes, but the dice really fall. You know, it's really, that's what makes D&D the best, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, no question. And I think that's also what's so exciting about it is not only just a very dramatic battle or very dramatic interaction with somebody, but it's also the creative solutions to figuring out a way to get that stuff done. I mean, I would never have thought in a million years that you would be like a ballista of, what was your character at the time? It was was that Lazar?
I think it was Lazar, yeah.
Yeah, so it was an elf ballista between two other folks, and it was just like launched you up into the air. It was so rad.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what's great about Dungeons & Dragons, regardless of the edition, is there was always that creative freedom where the players think it's just something totally outrageous. And the DM chucking the rule book out the window, you know, playing rule of cool, as you do have to sometimes. And it just really brings upon really special moments.
Yeah, and that to me is what the differentiation is between like proper D&D that we play and stuff, you know, like the video games. Now, I think every video game has its own sort of like they're coming along. There's a lot of cool stuff that happens in video games. But if you just want to throw out all the rules and just do something that's absolutely like off the wall, you know, there's no better way to do that than in D&D.
Agreed. All right. Were you able to roll up your stats as you were reminiscing?
I did. Yeah. So I got 6 of them, right?
Yes.
And I rolled like crap. So that'll be fun.
All right. So what did you get for strength?
I got a 9.
What about intelligence?
14.
Wisdom?
12.
Dex?
12.
Con?
7.
And charisma?
9.
All right. So we are going to take a short break for our monster moment. And when we get back, we're going to see what we can do with those stats and see what character you've rolled yourself into.
Very cool. Looking forward to it.
Welcome to the Monster Moment, brought to you by Dice and a Pencil. Today, we will be talking about dragons, the quintessential monster of tabletop role-playing games. Dragons are described as a proud ancient race of gigantic, carnivorous, winged reptiles. A dragon's behavior can range from chaotic and neutral to lawful good. This behavior is generally determined by their color. When attacking, dragons will always use their breath weapon first. These attacks come in different shapes depending upon the dragon, but all damage is represented by the dragon's current hit points. Often, in areas far from human civilization, dragon lairs contain hordes of treasure, and sometimes dragon eggs. Dragons themselves can be worth quite a lot of gold if subdued, fetching up to 1,000 gold pieces per hit point. This has been your monster moment, and remember, all you need is dice and a pencil.
All right, and welcome back. Bill, have you decided what class you're going to land on with your rolls?
Yeah, after looking at the scores, it actually seems like it's not that bad, especially if I'm intending to be a magic user, which has the prime requisite of intelligence. My intelligence being 14, that seemed pretty good on 3d6.
That's not bad at all. do you have a name for this magic user you'll be rolling with?
My working title right now is Scooter, but I, you know, we'll see how that works out.
All right, and of course we'll only be utilizing Scooter if we our actual play.
I would love that.
But you know, one of the questions I have, you know, you said you started what edition did you start with?
2nd.
So starting with 2nd edition, I know that we now play 5th edition. How does it feel being pigeonholed into your choice of class based upon your roles, where in some of the previous editions, you know, you're able to pick whoever you want, whatever race, mix and match, where in OSE, it's more very, whatever you rolled up, you rolled up.
It's very interesting because I think pigeonhole is probably a bit of a negative connotation for this, because in the one hand, I do feel like with 5e, there are many, many more options that are out there. That's very clear. And typically when I start creating a character in 5e, I start with what cool thing do I want to do? And then back into the race and class combination. I think this possibly changes the priority a little bit, because you would imagine that if you are rolling up a magic user or you are being handed a magic user, you are going to prioritize, instead of the character itself, the behaviors of that character and what that character does in play. One of the other things I know about this version is that your characters are extremely squishy. You are not going to get to know Scooter very much. And so if you've fallen in love with your character and the abilities that they do, then you're going to be sorely disappointed. So I also know that when Scooter does eventually die, I can roll up another one and the dice will tell me that this one is a dwarf or this one is a thief. And so I'm not terribly wedded to Scooter as a magic user.
So we'll find out how squishy he is. If you have a D4 available around you, let's see how many hit points Scooter will be rolling with, increasing his chances of survival.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild to me that you only get a D4.
It's why you hope that you have burly fighters in front of you to hide behind.
So that's a 3.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
All right. And so building on what you were just saying about when you start your character in other editions, you have a set goal for them or what they'd like to do. Power in this game is more generated through the items in which you collect rather than innate abilities that you start with. You know, magic users get a spell, but, you know, for example, clerics at first level don't get any spells because they have to, you know, prove to their gods that they're worthy of receiving their help. With that in mind, you know, how do you prefer your player characters? Do you like it when you start powerful at the beginning with multiple traits, which I know, you know, the one Dungeons and Dragons is kind of hinting at in their play testing, rather than you know, going into the dungeon with Scooter, 3 hit points and no armor available for you to wear, that you might have to hide behind, something in order to keep yourself alive. You know, how do you feel about that?
I think it informs your gameplay a little bit differently. So, for example, with Scooter, I know that if I am flippant about him and I decide that Scooter is just going to be a frontline magic user, you know, unwisely, of course, then I know that Scooter's life is going to be cut very, very short very quickly. So it informs my choices as a character a little bit more. I mean, in the couple of times that we played this, there has been instances where some people just get one shot and you are dead almost the second that you get into the dungeon. And so that's one perspective of the attitude of going into this kind of dungeon, because let's say you've got two identical dungeons and you're playing under the OSE version and the 5e version. The 5e version, we're going to go in there and poke around and really, I mean, if you're checking for traps, that's probably a uncommon thing to do. I think we've been playing for 6 years together now. How many times have we checked for traps in dungeons? Not very often.
Sure.
But I remember when we played OSE, this was something that we did pretty regularly. And I think one of the items that you get, or you can purchase rather, is a 10-foot pole specifically so that you can trigger traps far away from you. So I think it just informs the way that you approach your character and playing that character in identical situations.
Sure. And I want to say, touch upon again, because you did mention this before. So as you were just saying, 3 hit points, no armor, Scooter doesn't have a long chance of life. I know that newer games really kind of press the story aspect, like your character should have a background story. Where did he come from? I've always kind of liked to add that into my characters only to make them feel more real to me and kind of help myself immerse. Do you plan on coming up with a quick backstory for a character that you would build in OSE? And with that, taking that time to build that backstory, would character death turn you off from the game, or knowing that you only have 3 hit points is something that you've kind of make peace with when you decide to pick up this edition?
I prefer that. Let me answer that question in a different sense. So when I think about the backstory as it relates to Scooter, it's probably helpful for me to think up something that Scooter is a major trait of Scooter's. You know, I don't know that I'm going to go all the way back to his birth and talk about his siblings and his troubles with his family and how he was performed in school and stuff. But I do think it would be interesting for me to paint with a very broad brush about who he is, because that could inform the way that he approaches different situations inside of the dungeon. Now, if Scooter were to die, then I probably would not be too sad about it, because as I mentioned, there is the opportunity now to like go and be a cleric or go and be the other things. And the character creation process is so quick and straightforward. And to your point, there are limited options. So you can pick up another character just like that. And I think that's helpful. Now, to go back to the thought of, well, what happens if we go from level 1 to level 5 for an OSE character? I think at that point, I will be way more invested in Scooter's life, because it has been tested for so long and so narrowly. Whereas going from level 1 to a level 5 in 5e, it feels a little bit less of an achievement, I suppose, because that is kind of a given a lot of the times, unless you're playing with a particularly malevolent DM who is really testing the limits of a first level character. But I haven't seen that very much. Typically, DMs are gentle with first level characters to encourage them to get to level 5. And I don't know that that's the case with OSE.
No, I'd have to agree with you on that. I definitely think just the ease of rolling up characters in the OSE is something that DMs don't have to be that gentle, because you can just roll up another one, where in some of the newer games, it takes quite a while to roll up a character, deciding what you want, what backstory you want to go with. You know, like you said, if you were playing one of the more modern versions, you may spend more time really delving deep into the history of where that character came from, rather than, you know, let's start from the middle, you know, and go. Well, Bill, that's all the time we have for today. So I wanted to thank you for volunteering your time to talk with me.
Great. It was great to talk to you, Brian.
And remember, when you're playing TTRPGs, all you need is dice and a pencil.